Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York invites you to be the Informed Patient, the podcast that features experts from Central New York's only academic medical center. I'm your host, Amber Smith. The Upstate Global Health Institute is looking for participants for a treatment study for post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. To understand what that is and what the study entails, I'm talking with the principal investigator, Dr. Christopher Paolino. He's an assistant professor of medicine and microbiology and immunology, specializing in infectious disease at Upstate. Welcome back to The Informed Patient, Dr. Paolino.
Thanks for having me back.
So what is post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome?
Post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome goes by many names. It goes by that name. Some people refer to it as chronic Lyme. There's a new term out there called Lyme infection-associated chronic illness. These all are generally different flavors of the same thing, where somebody gets an infection with Lyme disease, they're treated for Lyme with an appropriate Lyme-directed therapy, but for whatever reason, they go on to have persistent symptoms lasting for 6 months or greater after the initial infection. These symptoms can be really debilitating for patients. Chronic fatigue, chronic pain, both joints and muscles, headaches, heart palpitations, sleep disturbances, even some mental health abnormalities like depression and anxiety can set in. So there's a lot of different symptoms that people will develop in that post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome phase. And it can be really difficult to manage from a treatment perspective for the patients as well as for the providers treating.
It seems like it'd be hard to diagnose, too.
It is. There's no biomarker or blood test or anything to determine whether or not somebody has post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. So it's all based on clinical kind of data and the clinical picture that the patient comes in with. But yeah, it can be very difficult to determine whether or not you're dealing with that versus some other process altogether.
Well, is this a reaction to the treatment for Lyme, or is this just like you call it chronic Lyme? Is it, I mean, can someone develop this if they never were treated for Lyme in the first place?
It's a good question. I think that there's many different types of theories that go into why people develop this syndrome. There is a thought that there's a persistence of infection, although I think that a lot of the studies that have been done have indicated that maybe that's not the case. Part of our study is going to be looking at that side of the table. There are other people that believe that people will go on to develop these chronic symptoms due to an autoimmune disease that's been triggered by the infection. Some people believe that there is persistence of inflammation due to debris that the bacteria secrete into the body, into the joints, that can cause problems. There's chronic pain from nerve damage that can be done via the infection acutely. There's also some thought process that chronic pain syndromes and centralized pain syndromes can potentially play a role as well. So there's a lot of different thoughts. Our study is specifically going to be looking at the possibility that there's a potential persistent infection that needs a different approach to antimicrobial therapy.
Do we know what percent of people who get diagnosed with Lyme go on to develop post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome?
I think the rough estimates are that 80 to 85% of people who develop Lyme disease are treated and after a short period of recovery do well and don't have any chronic issues. There's about 20%, give or take, that will go on to have these more persistent symptoms. And those are the folks that we're going to be targeting in terms of this study in particular.
Have you noticed, are there more men than women? Are we talking about children or adults? How does that break down, that 20%?
Yeah, so I think that the majority of patients are going to be adults. I'm not a pediatrician, but my understanding of the pediatric Lyme cases is that the vast majority of kids do go on to recover and do well. So it is something that we see that is worse with age. So the older the patient is, the more likely that they're going to have these chronic symptoms. As far as male to female distribution, I feel like in my clinic, I see a pretty even distribution. Some of the literature might indicate that perhaps females are slightly more prone to these chronic symptoms. And it's not clear to me exactly why that's the case.
It's probably way too soon to know this, but if someone is diagnosed with Lyme and they're in treatment for it, is there anything to do to prevent this chronic Lyme from developing?
Yeah, I think the main thing is early recognition and preventing it in the first place. That's probably the biggest. But early recognition of a tick bite, early recognition of the symptoms. The thought process is the longer somebody has had symptoms of active infection prior to treatment, the more likely they're going to potentially go on and develop these symptoms after this.
So the symptoms, we've heard about this bullseye rash, but beyond that, what are the symptoms that would lead someone to think maybe they have Lyme disease?
So aside from the bullseye rash, which if you see a bullseye rash in our region in the Northeast, it is Lyme disease until proven otherwise. And we would just treat based on the rash. We don't wait for blood tests or anything like that. We just treat people. Aside from that, the symptoms of tick-borne diseases, Lyme disease included, are pretty nonspecific. So what I generally will tell people is if you develop a flu-like illness, minus the respiratory symptoms and the congestion that you would see with flu, if you get fevers, headaches, body aches, all those other kind of flu-like symptoms in the spring or the summer months, you know, aside from maybe COVID circulating during those times, you have to have a thought process of, or is this potentially something I picked up from a tick bite along my adventures in the outdoors?
This is Upstate's The Informed Patient Podcast. I'm your host, Amber Smith. I'm talking with Dr. Christopher Paolino, who is leading a study on post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome. So tell us about the study you have underway.
Sure. So the study is based off of some bench research that's been done, as well as some unpublished mouse models that basically show that you can decrease the amount of bacteria that cause the Lyme infection by giving a dose of antibiotics every 5 days or so. And the thought process is that you decrease the population of the bacteria. And in many cases, some of these bacteria will go into almost a hibernation mode where they kind of stop replicating, they kind of decrease their metabolism, and it's harder to treat bacteria in that phase. And the thought process is if we treat and then give a couple days in between treatments, it'll trick the bacteria into re-replicating, restarting its normal life cycle, and then you hit it again with another round of antibiotics. And every time you do this, you presumably will drop the population level down. And over the course of about 6 weeks and 9 total treatments in these other models in the benchtop and with mice, there is an increased likelihood that you're going to clear the infection completely. Nobody has ever done this in a clinical trial in humans. So this is what we're going to be looking at to see if it does potentially make a difference in the human population. There are people that are doing different forms of pulse dosing. That's the term we use for this kind of thing. But again, nobody's actually shown that it's definitively going to work in humans. Nobody's shown that it's actually safe. And the primary thing that we're going to do in this study is to show that it's safe, which I believe it probably will be. And it's also going to give us a little bit of a glimpse of, is there any potential signal that this is a treatment option for these post-treatment Lyme disease cases?
Which antibiotic are you using?
We are using the intravenous medication known as ceftriaxone. It is a well-known antibiotic. We use it for a variety of other infections. You know, it's something that we use for hospitalized patients with meningitis and urinary tract infections, but it's also one of the drugs that we'll go to for more severe cases of Lyme disease and Lyme arthritis as well. So it is a well-known drug. It is a licensed drug to be used in the United States. It is actually not FDA licensed for Lyme disease because the studies have not been done for that purpose. But it is, you know, it's known in the guidelines as being a first-line agent for patients with like Lyme arthritis.
So tell me who you're recruiting as participants. What's the ideal person that you're looking for?
We're looking for adults. Again, I'm not a pediatrician, so I'm looking for 18-year-old patients up to 75 years old. We're looking for patients that meet the definition of post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome, and we have some criteria that we go through with that. We're looking for patients who have been off of antibiotics for a period of time because we don't want that to muddy the waters as well. Patients who have any kind of autoimmune diseases or any other disease states that could mimic the chronic fatigue and the joint pains and things like that that our Lyme patients have, those are also people that we would exclude from the study as well. So there's a whole inclusion-exclusion criteria that we'll go through and we'll screen our patients as they come.
Now, how do you go about, or do you divide them into those who get the antibiotic and those who get a placebo?
So it's a randomized study. I think that's going to be the only way that we're going to really be able to show whether or not something like this is safe and that it works. So we do randomize at a one-to-one ratio. So it's a 50-50 chance of whether or not you receive placebo, which is just a saline infusion, versus the ceftriaxone, the active drug. At the six-month mark of the study, we do unblind patients. And if they did receive the placebo at that point, we will offer them the treatment arm as well, just to allow everybody to have the possibility of receiving the antibiotic.
Now, how will this work? Once someone is accepted into the study, what can they expect?
So once they've screened and they're enrolled, they will be coming in on a schedule of Monday, Friday, Wednesday over a course of 2 weeks. And we repeat that for a total of 6 weeks. So it'll be 9 total infusions. They'll come into the clinic. They'll have an IV placed in their arm and they will receive either their antibiotic or the placebo, whichever they're randomized to. They won't know what they get. I won't know what they get. It's all blinded. So it doesn't introduce any bias into the study. And then we'll do some blood work. We'll do some surveys, ask them about their symptoms. And as we go through the study, we'll be able to track changes of those symptoms, any of the blood work that we do, just to, again, check for safety and check for any kind of efficacy signal.
How long do these visits last?
I generally tell patients between 1.5 and 2 hours, give or take. Some studies can be a little bit longer. Some study days can be a little longer. It just depends on what we're doing on that particular day. The infusion days, I think we generally tell patients, you know, plan to be here for approximately 2 hours just so we can get through all the screening questions and the questionnaires as well as any other procedures that need to be done.
And part of what you're looking for is the safety of this. So I imagine you're pretty attuned to all of those symptoms. If something arises that is troubling, does that person come out of the study, or how do you deal with things that might happen to a person during the study?
Protocols are written in a way that if there were severe reactions or something, we generally would remove the patient from the study and they would just go back to their clinician that treats them for their Lyme disease as an outpatient. And we would address any of the side effects or anything like that. The main side effects that we would see with ceftriaxone are probably going to be upset stomach and diarrhea, which is something that we generally will treat pretty easily. There are some labs that we will monitor throughout the course of the study to make sure that patients aren't developing any problems with their liver or the kidney, which are fairly rare phenomenon. We also check and make sure that there's no abnormalities with their bone marrow because these intravenous antibiotics can affect the body in different ways. And ceftriaxone has the ability to affect the bone marrow long-term if you're on the antibiotic for 4 weeks or longer. I don't suspect that we're going to see any effect from that standpoint because we're not giving the drug every day. We're just doing it every 5 days. So it's a much, much less overall drug. So that I don't believe there's going to be that toxicity that we'll see. But all of these things are generally reversible once we stop the antibiotics. We monitor it pretty closely.
I see. Now, is there any compensation for their time?
Yep, we have a modest compensation for their time and their travel when they come in for their visits, depending on which visit it is and how long they're there for.
So what would you say are the benefits of participating in this study in particular, or any study?
Any research study that we do, we're looking to answer a specific question. It's helpful for patients to be interested and to participate in these studies, because without the volunteers, we're never going to get an answer to any of these questions. And, you know, there are patients out in the community that are doing different forms of what we're doing in this study, but nobody really knows what the effectiveness is. Nobody really knows what the safety profile is when given the drugs in the way that we're giving them. So it's helpful for us to advance the science, advance, you know, tools that could potentially be used. And to be honest, you know, a lot of these types of treatments, if you're doing like pulse dosing with antibiotics, many insurance companies aren't going to cover that because it's not part of the standard of care or it's not part of the guidelines. So if we can show that it's a useful option for patients, that might potentially move the needle a little bit. And hopefully down the road, insurance companies will fund and reimburse for this kind of treatment.
When do you anticipate the study will wrap up?
So we're anticipating wrapping up at the end of 2025. The hope is that we will have an increased number of participants over the course of the next 6 months or so. My guess is it's probably going to take another year, just given the rate of recruitment. That's something that we're still looking to get people into this study and to try to meet our goal number. I think we're shooting for 44 patients here at our site.
Are there other sites that are also participating?
There is another site on the East Coast that is like a sister site doing a very similar protocol. We're not linked other than the fact that we work through the Columbia Clinical Trials Network, which is through the Columbia University system. And Dr. Brian Fallon is the head of that group. And that's where we got our funding for this project.
So what happens afterward once you have all of this data? How will you know if this 5-day course is the best treatment?
We'll take a look at the statistical analysis once we get all the data cleaned and compiled, and we'll see if there are any flags. So see if there's anything that indicates that there's a safety issue, see if there's anything that indicates that there's potentially a clinical benefit. And if there is, the idea would be to do a multi-center study with a much larger patient population to really focus on a primary outcome of clinical efficacy and effect.
So what's the best way for people to learn more if they're interested in signing up?
We have recruiters that are setting up screening visits on a daily basis here. Our phone number for them is 315-464-9869. We also have an email address that people can send inquiries to. It's trials@upstate.edu.
Terrific. Well, I appreciate you making time to tell us about your research, Dr. Paolino.
Thank you for having me.
My guest has been Dr. Christopher Paolino, an assistant professor of medicine, microbiology, and immunology at Upstate, specializing in infectious disease. And once again, if you're interested in learning more about this study for post-treatment Lyme disease syndrome, call 315-464-9869 or send an email to trials, T-R-I-A-L-S, at upstate.edu. The Informed Patient is a podcast covering health, science, and medicine brought to you by Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York, and produced by Jim Howe, with sound engineering by Bill Broquel and graphic design by Dan Cameron. Find our archive of previous episodes at upstate.edu/informed. If you enjoyed this episode, please invite a friend to listen. You can also rate and review the Informed Patient podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, or wherever you tune in. This is your host, Amber Smith, thanking you for listening.